It's the Friday before the Labor Day holiday weekend. Paul is out. Caleb in for you here on AM 1380 WPHM. One of those unique things about the Blue Water area, of course, is parking along the Edison Parkway, watching the freighters go by, either coming in or going out of Lake Huron. The Lakes Carriers Association is the organization that represents our U.S. shipping industry on the Great Lakes, and Jim Weekly is their president. Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing great, Caleb. It's always great to be with you.
Last time we caught up was on Mackinac Island. You were up at the policy conference, and so were we. And one of the big news stories that came out of the Mackinac conference was the Sioux Locks funding. I guess kind of recap that for us and let us know how things are going.
Well, it was huge. There were two big things that have happened. You know, Governor Snyder announced at the Michigan Policy Conference that the state of Michigan was going to contribute, I think it was $52 million towards that project. That's a big deal. It's about a $1 billion project altogether, and it's authorized at full federal expense. However, under the current administration, they'd like to see additional money from non-federal participants. And to Governor Snyder's credit, he recognizes that this will jumpstart the process, right? So the state can move things along quicker. And once the federal government gets moving on the project, I think they'll be even more committed than they are now. The other huge news on the Sioux Lock project is that the Army Corps, to their credit, admitted there's some fault in their 2005 study, recognized that they got some things significantly wrong, so they recalculated the benefit-to-cost ratio. And it almost quadrupled. It went from 0.7 to 2.4, and in my opinion, I think they left some money on the table. It could have been higher than it was, but it's high as it needs to be, and I think we should hopefully start seeing some progress in the next year, particularly given the money that the governor and the state of Michigan have committed to the project. And so I'm excited about that. I've been fighting for over a decade with the Corps on the flawed study, and it looks like they've made some progress in the right direction.
And just so our listeners understand here, Sioux Locks, obviously in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, very important link between the upper and lower Great Lakes, but they are owned by the U.S. government and operated by the Army Corps of Engineers. So just because Michigan says, yeah, we want to do this, you need to go through the feds.
Agreed, and the reason that matters to people in Michigan is there's a Department of Homeland Security study that calculated that if that lock is down for 6 months, Michigan's unemployment will skyrocket to 22%.
Wow.
Now, as you may recall, in 2009, it topped out at 15%. So imagine an unemployment rate that was significantly worse than the Great Recession because of a single piece of infrastructure. And this project will create a second lock. It'll create resiliency to the Great Lakes navigation system. The same DHS study that I just mentioned figured it would cost our economy $1.1 trillion if there's a six-month outage. So it is, you know, there's a reason that in World War II we had over 10,000 troops stationed at the Sioux.
There's four locks there currently. What you have the MacArthur lock, you have the Poe lock, that's the big one, and then you have two others that aren't really in use. So basically what this would do is add another Poe lock-sized lock that would accommodate the 1,000-footers, correct?
Correct. So the Sabin and the Davis date back to pre-World War I, 1914, 1919. So the plan is to take the footprint of the Sabin and the Davis and, you know, create what I call the repo, or a twin post size lock, and that
that's a
would,
good name for it.
Yeah, you can be a repo fan. So that would create system resiliency, and it also gives the core flexibility because, you know, right now they have to do all their maintenance in a very short period of time in the winter at the Sioux, and if you haven't been at the Sioux in the winter, it can get pretty cold. So they can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars just removing ice from the lock so they can start working on it. And there's some significant savings that can be made long-term to maintaining the PO just by building the repo.
Gotcha. That definitely makes sense. So when you talk about that number, that unemployment number jumping up if the Sulaks were to be taken down or inoperational, if you will, we're like, well, there's the people who work on the boats, but it affects way more than just those in that industry, correct?
Yeah, in fact, there was he's a retired Michigan State professor now. His name's Peter Kakla, just a great guy, and he's a world-renowned expert on iron ore and its impact on the economy. And he calculated that 3.2% of our nation's GDP depends on the PO, and he even limited that calculation to the automobile and the heavy appliance manufacturing. So when you think of 100% of America's iron ore goes through that lock, all the jobs that are created at steel mills and all the jobs that are created at automobile plants and heavy equipment manufacturing and appliance manufacturing, they're all dependent on that supply chain.
That is incredible. And we all know how important it is, Jim. And it sounds like that we have made enough noise that the powers that be in Washington have also realized how important that is as well. We're talking to Jim Weekly. He's the president of the Lake Carriers Association, and you're the organization that represents the domestic shipping industry on the Great Lakes. I had the unique privilege this past weekend, Jim, to take a ride on one of Interlake Steamship Company's tug barge units, the Dorothy Ann and the Pathfinder, and it took a cruise up the Saginaw River, if you will, and talking to members of that crew, the captain and everyone, it's been a very, very busy year for them. Now, they're mostly doing the stone trade, but they said for the good first month of the season, they were doing iron ore up the Cuyahoga over near you. So I guess the question is, how is this year shaping up? It appears to be a quite busy one on the lakes.
So I paraphrase it by saying we're having a mediocre year. And I'll take mediocre any day, right? We've been through the Great Recession. We're not back to our pre-recession numbers overall. Iron ore is up. That's kind of the bright spot. We're up about 5% for the month of July. We also got off to a rough start, particularly because of the ice problems. Early onset of ice in the Great Lakes delayed some cargoes. Coast Guard had as many as 5 of their 9 icebreakers at one point were inoperable because they were either in scheduled maintenance or they had an unscheduled breakdown. So those created some challenges, so now we're playing catch-up. And the Dorothy Ann and the Pathfinder, what a great ship. She's together, that tug barge unit is 711 feet long. And it can go up the Cuyahoga River, largest ship to go up there, very complicated turns and twists. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to watch Jeremy, the captain of that boat, navigate and pilot that ship through those turns. The skill, I'm amazed how relaxed he is because he's done it so many times. But it's fascinating to watch him manage the ship, navigated around those tough turns, and watch the crew too. The self-unloading equipment is fascinating. You know, some of our larger ships can offload cargo at 10,000 tons per hour. I always say, if you show me a parking lot within 250 feet of the water, we'll show you an unloading facility.
That's very true. And talking about Captain Jeremy there, yeah, I watched him thread that ship like a needle through all the drawbridges in Bay City, and I was up there in the pilot house with him, watching him do it, and oh my gosh, that is a skill to go up Saginaw River, but especially the Cuyahoga River, and just watching them thread that boat there, it's an impressive operation, to say the least.
Agreed.
So we're talking to Jim Weekly again. He's with the Lake Carriers Association. So things are, you said, kind of mediocre on the lakes right now. You know, iron ore is up, but maybe what are those commodities that are down at the moment?
So coal is down, and that's really not too much of a surprise. Coal is on a downward long-term trend because of the price of natural gas. So a lot of the coal facilities are being idled, and power production is being moved by or moved to natural gas. Flux stone or aggregates. We use it for construction, as well as a scrubber stone for coal fire plants to absorb some of the pollutants and keep them from going in the atmosphere. That's down about 3% from where we were a year ago. So, you know, we're a service industry, so we are dependent on the larger economy, primarily steel, electrical, and construction.
Yeah.
So, you know, we still have some season left, and I think we're still playing a little bit of catch-up, so I think we'll finish strong. At least I hope, that's my hope, we'll finish strong. I'm always a bit of an optimist. So, you know, I always say it's liquids, locks, box, and rocks. You know, that's how you explain our industry to people that are outside our industry. Liquids is about moving petroleum. We don't really do that on the Great Lakes. The boxes are containers. We're starting to do that on the containers a little bit, not on our boats, but on some of the ocean ships going in. The locks are the small tug and barges on the river system. We're the rocks. We're all about moving low-value cargo, but lots of it.
And that is something that I get asked a lot, and kind of a point people who might be new to the Port Huron area are watching the ships go by. They watch a freighter go by, and they're like, what is that carrying? What's on that ship? And I can't give a straight answer, but it's usually one of those three things, either some sort of a stone aggregate or iron ore or coal. And it's one of those three, usually, if you see a freighter going by here.
Agreed. We move a little bit of cement in some of our smaller ships, but those are what our big three cargoes are.
So your long-term outlook, Jim, for the Great Lakes shipping industry, positive?
Yeah, you know, we are in a good place. I think we're, you know, I'm always a little reluctant for antitrust reasons to make, you know, long-term predictions of say where we're going, but, you know, that we've been here over 200 years, and I think we'll be here 200 more. Our ships last a long time. They're in fresh water. We always, we don't replace, we rebuild. We'll re-engine. You know, we think it's environmentally better, you know, to continue to use our existing ships than to tow them over to third world countries and scrap them and build new in other countries. So our ships in some cases have been here 50, many plus years. In fact, we have one ship that's operated continuously for over 100 years. It worked its way down, and now it's being converted to a tug barge to move cement. It started out as an iron ore carrier when it was first launched about the same time the Titanic was.
And that would be the St. Mary's
Challenger.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Sir, the Challenger.
Why do we see that happen here in the United States versus if we look at some of the Canadian flagged vessels that make their way through Port Huron, they look all shiny and new?
Yeah, well, they won't look shiny and new for long. But the so what the Canadians have done is they've done away with their build requirement. So most countries, maritime countries in the world, have what they call a cabotage requirement. It's a French term that means between the capes. So it means that cargoes moved between two Canadian ports have to be on a Canadian flagship. It has to be Canadian flagged and Canadian crewed, but it no longer has to be Canadian built. So in the U.S., it has to be American owned, American built, and American crewed. And we talk about the national defense reasons for that. So there are actually multiple defense reasons for our Jones Act, which is our cabotage laws. So we build in the U.S. The Chinese build the Canadian Lakers, and they're starting to build some in Croatia as well. No surprise, you can build them cheaper in foreign countries than you can build in North America. The Canadian industry convinced their government, they used to only charge like an import duty. They charge an import duty, and then they convinced the government to do away with that import duty. Now, keep in mind, the Canadian fleet was originally built with Canadian government tax subsidy. So the vessels that they're replacing now were built at a government subsidy. Our ships are not subsidized at all. We're all private investment. private investors or public companies. And we stand by our build requirement and our Jones Act, and we think it's important for America's security, both our economic security, which is, you know, making sure that we can move our cargoes and provide those jobs, and our homeland security, which takes place within the United States. We believe that it's important to have people that understand what's going on around them. You know, particularly you're familiar with the, if you see something, say something. Well, if you don't know what you're looking at, you're not going to know something's unusual. So we think American crews, American captains, do a better job of protecting what happens within our country and our home, protecting our homeland. And then the third aspect of that Jones Act or the cabotage is what we call the national security aspect. So that's how we project and protect our troops when they're deployed overseas. If you look at all the cargo that we have to move to support our soldiers and sailors, it's not moved on Navy vessels. It's moved on merchant marine vessels. So all that cargo that goes to Afghanistan and Iraq and Korea and Europe to support our soldiers is moved on vessels. And without our ability to build ships in the United States, we wouldn't be able to build our Navy. In fact, if you look at what has happened in Canada, Canada's shipyards all went bankrupt. So now they're looking at trying to build Navy ships and Canadian icebreakers, and they're having to bring back shipyards that were closed because of bankruptcy. So there really is an important aspect of that.
That last point that you made is new to me. I didn't realize that. So that's very interesting. I will say one last thing here in closing, Jim. We mentioned that I went on the ride on one of the freighters here over the past weekend, and what a great group of people there. Everyone on that boat was really willing to talk to you. I never felt like I was in their way, and they have a lot of pride in what they do.
Well said, and amen to that. I mean, I work with some great people, and I always say it's better to show it than to tell it, and no one tells our story better than our sailors aboard our ships. And most of them are from the Great Lakes region, right? One of the things, when I was a personnel director at Interlake, I liked to hire people from the Great Lakes because I knew they were getting into it. They knew the lore of the industry, and they're not afraid of cold weather, and they're not afraid of hard work.
Very well put, Jim. All right, we appreciate you joining us this morning. Have a great Labor Day holiday weekend here, Jim, and maybe I'll see you back up on the island next year, but we'll be sure to check in with you again.
Count on it, Caleb. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and it's always a pleasure to talk to the people of the Port Huron era.
It's the president of the Lake Carriers Association, Jim Weekly, here on 1380 WPHM.